Well, now that Adam has broken the 10-minute rule of speaking, I feel like I've got at least 30 minutes, right? That's No. I want to say that I have a 9-year-old. It's not her birthday, and there's no way I could possibly make Rice Krispie treats, so my hat's off to you. You know, as Cabinet Secretary for Military Affairs and Public Safety for the state of West Virginia, I'm responsible for the National Guard, the state police, all of our prisons, all of our jails, all of our parole, fire commission, emergency management, homeland security, et cetera, et cetera. What this does, though, is this gives me an umbrella in which to look at everything from a holistic approach as opposed to just being the Commissioner of Corrections or whatever. And the Commissioner of Corrections works very closely with me and for me. You know, he has a saying. Every time I see him, I say, well, Commissioner Rubenstein, how are things going? And he looks at me and he goes, well, Cabinet Secretary, business is good. And unfortunately, in the corrections business is always good in West Virginia. I was supposed to give an overview of a state's perspective. And as Thomas pointed out at the opening, our numbers are relatively small. We're not a California. We're not a Texas. We don't have hundreds of thousands of prisoners. But what we are is a good example of what has been happening across the United States, and it gives one the ability to, in some manageable terms, look at the problem in a manageable proportion. To do so, let's go back about 20 years. 20 years ago, the state of West Virginia only had about 1,900 prisoners. We have one of the lowest crime rates in the nation in West Virginia. We still do. But we have today the fastest or second fastest rate of increase in incarceration, growth incarceration in the nation. The highest increasing rate of prison growth. We are increasing at an annual rate of 7%. 20 years ago, 1,800, 1,900 prisoners. At that point, we had two major penitentiaries with 1,800, 1,900 beds. One of those, our principal one for maximum security, was your typical dank, dark labyrinth of cells of which made it rife for murders, rapes, all of the bad things that used to be associated with prisons. Because of that, the feds came in and threatened receivership. They also looked at our county jails, and they were in similarly deplorable conditions, and they threatened receivership. So the state went on a campaign of building a 10-jail regional jail system, which we have put in place. Counties feed into it. The counties pay a per diem to the regional jails. We also started building out more prisons, built a new 1,100-man maximum security prison, state-of-the-art. But then we also built a female prison. We also built a young offenders prison. And we did like everybody else. We started building, adding. To the point where today we have 5,000 bed space in our prisons. But instead of having 1,800, 1,900 prisoners, we now have 6,300 prisoners and only 5,000 beds. So you say, what do you do with the other 1,300? That's why I mentioned the regional jails. We just stuffed them into our regional jails and said, lie on the floor. Now, we know that that's not a solution, but how do we fix it? Well, we build more jails or prisons. No, we don't, and we can't just afford to keep building our way out of this. The problem is we have had projections by George Washington University, which they did a research study back in the year 2000, 2001, which projected for our prison growth up through the year 2020, and that projection has proven to be uncannily accurate, to the point where 2 years ago it was off by 2 prisoners. That projection now has us at right at the 6,300 mark where we are, but they're now projecting that in 2.5 years, we will go from 6,300 to 8,500. How do we deal with that? How do states deal with that type of rate of increase of growth? Well, I've been dealing with this with my governor for the last 4 years, and I've been saying, Governor, we've got to build, we've got to build. And he's kept saying, no, no, no. Find a better solution. So he issued an executive order in which he created a commission to study possible solutions other than building. And to do this, we have come up with a commission that's comprised of the executive branch, judicial branch, legislative branch, nonprofits, and representatives from communities throughout the state. 40 people. That's it. And we've brought them together for the last 5 months to discuss ways that we could approach this situation other than just building our way out of it. Well, you say, why not just build your way out of it? As was mentioned, the increasing cost of building, as we all know, it's getting huge. But let me just give you an idea from West Virginia's standpoint. How many of you know any flat spot in West Virginia? I don't know of any. To build a 1,200-bed maximum security prison in West Virginia, any guesses? $200 million. Those are the estimates that have been given to us for 1,200 beds. Now, you had on top of that, after you build that prison, you got $26,000 to $30,000 a year per prisoner just to maintain them. So, as you can see, we've got a conundrum. As a matter of fact, we've got a real crisis on our hands. Already 1,300, we're stuffing them into the jails. And we've got another 2,200 on the way in the next 2.5 years. So what this commission has looked at doing and the recommendations it has provided, I'm supposed to give this report to the governor in the next 2 weeks, we're coming up with a comprehensive agenda. Many of the solutions that we are proposing are not new to you in this room. Greater use of community behavior, health, and substance abuse services for both prevention and for reentry, stressing the word community. We want to divert low-level felony offenders to day report centers and other community-based alternative sentencing, and also divert more to probation, where the needs are addressed in a community setting. We also are looking for possible statutory changes to parole eligibility, as well as examining in its entirety the state criminal code, a huge undertaking. Plus, of course, we do have to add a variety of beds, but we are going to focus on work release and additional transitional housing services. As you can see, we are probably going to have to build something, but we have to be smart and target what we build and how we build it. Very quickly, I want to say we know that we are addressing we will be facing some impediments or obstacles. As Adam Gelb just mentioned, much of those deal with public opinion. But in West Virginia, our justices are elected, and as you know, our lawmakers are elected. What lawmaker ever got, or justice, ever got elected for being soft on crime? I mean, if you can point out one to me, please let me know how they campaigned. So it's against their grain to want to look at reducing minimum sentences, to reducing some of the time served. It's against what they see as their best interests in many ways. But we have to educate the public on the need to be smart on crime, not tough on crime. Some judges agree with community-based sanctions, but some aren't as enlightened. So we have to go do a better job of convincing our judges that community sanctions work. Plus, we have to look at victims' feelings. Whenever you have community-based sanctions, victims very often see their perpetrator right there with them the very next day. So we have to keep that in mind. Plus, there's just a public demand for punishment and justice, and we have to make sure that there's a balance between the two. And then we have to manage expectations. When we come out with this report, we can't say this is a panacea. We have to be realistic in what we expect it to accomplish, keeping in mind that no matter what you do, one bad apple can ruin it for everyone. But reform we must, and reform we will, because if we don't, my Commissioner of Corrections is going to continue to say business is good. Thank you.